your tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step,
step by step,
I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Ryan. Hey, thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or that might distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? All right, let's start the meditation. All right, so we're going to do the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, some of you might have cards in front of you that have it written on them. If not, there's a big sign up here, so you can just follow along. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Mike to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of a sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Through it was not our intention to create such an impression. Many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have trapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is the concept is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. So we have Tom here for his fourth installment of this series. And last week I kind of talked about how every time I hear him speak, he lights a fire in me. But something I started to notice after the meeting last week was how many other people were coming up to me and saying the same thing. And you've got a guy here who talks about being like a hopeless case and like just like a lost cause. And now he's a man that walks with God every day. I guess what I'm trying to say is just pay attention, because tonight could be that night that he says something that's going to save your life. And I wouldn't want you to miss it. So let's bring up Tom.
Thanks for putting those expectations on me. Put my hat on so I can see your faces. You know, that light is pretty rough up there, you know. My name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic. How's everybody tonight? Good. Great. So we're going to talk about the four step tonight. Right? By now, you know, we should have figured out three things. Those three things are pretty simple. First of all, that I couldn't do this. I can't. Second, that he can. And so third, that I'll let him. We had to take that action, make a decision to turn our life and our will over to the care of God as we understood him. And I don't know if I, you know, spoke about this last week, but it wasn't too long ago I was talking to a young man, and he said, "Well, I don't think I could do that." And I said, "Well, why not?" And he said, "Well, I don't understand God." And I said, "Well, that's okay, because that's God as you understood him." And he said, "What?" And I said, "That's God as you understood him, that you don't understand him. Well, that's okay. You know, it takes a long time and a practice of a way of life, you know, that we start to discover what a friend that God can be to us. and what a friend that we can be to him. Because there's things that we can do for him and things that he can do for us. And that's why we find out why we were chosen. We're told that in the third step. We have a new employer. Being all powerful, you know, he'll take care of us as long as we perform his work. You know, and so that's a way of life. You know, it's a philosophy of life here in Alcoholics Anonymous. In this group, I know that they like to talk a lot about being a recovered alcoholic. And I'm a recovered alcoholic. I often would describe being a recovered alcoholic as one who no longer has the obsession to drink and to use. That was removed from me. That was removed from me simply because I took a suggestion from a man who asked me to get on my knees and ask God for the strength to stay clean and sober. And I told him, well, I don't see how that's going to do anything, because I was still so defiant from my alcoholism and still had such a resentment towards God. And he said, well, how's your way been working, wise guy? And I had to tell him, after 10 years of stopping and never being able to stay stopped and hanging around the rooms of AA, that my way hadn't worked. And then he told me that it didn't make any difference what I believed in, then does it? Because what I believe in doesn't work. And I didn't have to believe. I didn't have to understand. This isn't about what you're going to understand or what you're going to believe. This is about what action are you willing to take. Because action is the key. Action is the key. Willingness brings us to the action. If we're not willing, then we need to ask God to help us with that willingness. I came to believe because I realized then, from taking the action of asking God every morning on my knees for the strength to stay clean and sober, that one day the obsession was gone, that it had been lifted from me. You know, it's 33 years ago. That obsession's never come back. And I haven't stopped asking God, my God, every morning on my knees for the strength to stay clean and sober. Why would I do that? Why would I stop doing that when I realized that that worked? And I came to believe in a power greater than me that would restore me to sanity. He took the obsession for me to drink and to use away. So I couldn't. He could. And I made a decision to turn my life and my will over to his care. I take that action, and I take that action constantly all the time. And that action means that I need to move into the vigorous action of the program Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm a recovered alcoholic, which means that my obsession was lifted. And not only was my obsession lifted, but my defects of character no longer rule my life. That's what makes this alcoholic recover. And that happens on a daily basis. You know, it doesn't happen. It didn't just happen one time many years ago, and then I graduated. Because in here, like I said last week, we don't have any report cards, and you're not going to graduate. This is a way of life that I take on a daily basis. You know, as being a recovered alcoholic is kind of like being a recovered gunshot victim. See? Let's say that, you know, I decided to go back out there again and started doing the things I used to do. You know, people tried to kill me before I got here, and they more than likely would try to kill me again, because it wouldn't be too long before I was right back being the person that I used to be. You know, and somebody shot me, and they took me up to the hospital, and they removed the bullet from me, and I lived. I would be a recovered gunshot victim, but I would not be bulletproof. And so this recovery, it happens on a daily basis, a day at a time, you know. And we have to learn a process of inventory. And we talked last week about why is it that people in Alcoholics Anonymous like to talk about the problem. They like to talk about the problem because we need to know what the problem was so we know what to do about it. This is a little book called The Little Red Book. It's an old book, you know, but it's very helpful with the steps. And I like the way it talks about the purpose of a moral inventory. The reason why we're doing this is to expose the harmful character traits of our alcoholic personalities. You know, we talked about this, that what caused me constantly to go in and out of the rooms Alcoholics Anonymous was this whole idea that the problem was the alcohol. And that all I had to do was just quit the alcohol and quit the drugs, and I had no problem. Case closed. You know, I never could take the first step. So my problems are always first step problems. Because this is a life of constant surrender. That's what this life requires me to do. It constantly surrender to the fact that my problem is not alcohol and drugs. My problem is me. I'm the problem. So it's my alcoholic personality that's the problem. You know, why is it? Why? I mean, once the obsession of drinking to use was taken from me, then why would I need to do anything else? I could have just graduated and left and said, well, that's over. Or I could just stay sober on the first three steps. And, you know, if I think that I could just stay sober on the first three steps, then I'm going to miss out all of the joy in life. Because I won't have joy. And I want to be happy, joyous, and free. I want what the third step promises me. You know, the third step is the keystone and the arch through which we pass to freedom. Freedom from what? Freedom from the bondage of self. Because this is what the problem is. The problem is, you know, that I have this bondage of self. That I can't stop thinking about me. I don't know who you think about all day, but I know who I think about. I think about me. I wake up in the morning thinking about me, and I go to bed at night thinking about me. And the only time I think about you is how it relates to me. That's natural. That's a natural way for an alcoholic to think. I never met another alcoholic who didn't think that way. And so this way of life is a way of life of learning how to practice the opposite of that, how to try to be unselfish. Well, I have to know, what is it that's standing in my way? What's standing in my way of getting to that joy and getting released from that bondage of self? I'm standing in the way with my personality. Well, if I don't know anything about my personality and I don't take an inventory of my personality, then how am I supposed to work with God to change that personality? Because that's what God wants me to do. He wants me to be a good employee. Now, how am I going to be a good employee? How am I going to be a sharp tool if I don't sharpen myself? And if I don't make myself fit? And many of us that have been here for a long time, we hear that all the time. Well, all the time we hear that we're only as sober as we are spiritually fit. So I need to make myself spiritually fit. I do that through an inventory. So I need to know the traits of my alcoholic personality to eliminate from them the new personalities, to eliminate them from the new personalities that with the help of the Alcoholics Anonymous program as a way of life we now propose to develop. The AA usage of the term personality deals with the development of new character traits necessary to our recovery from alcoholism. It has no relation to personal magnetism emanating from physical health, beauty, or charm. So, you know, I think that, well, you know, I can fix all my problems. I just go to the gym, get myself all muscled up, get myself all prettied up, put on a bunch of nice fancy clothes, get me a nice fancy car to ride in, get me a nice fancy place to live, and that's it. Now I can feel good about me, right? That doesn't work too well. Because those are the things that I've been doing my whole life. My whole life I've been thinking that somehow I could wrest satisfaction and happiness from this life if I just managed well. That somehow I was going to be able to fix the outside of me. And by fixing the outside of me, I was going to fix the inside of me. And that's what the problem is. The problem is that thinking. And that's the problem with alcoholism. Alcoholism is a mind-powered disease. It's centered in my mind, and it's talking to me. It's talking to me, and it's telling me that I know what I need to be happy. Don't tell me what I need to be happy. I know what I need. But see, the problem is, I don't know what I need. I only know what I want. I don't know what I need. Only God knows what I need. That's why I need to make a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. Because He knows what I need. I don't. I only know what I want. So how do I clear up this wreckage that's keeping me from living in this third step? Because every step after the third step says to me, let go and let God. That's what this whole program, that's what it's all saying to me. That's what it's teaching me to be. It's teaching me to be a person that can live a life of letting go and letting God. So I can have what? So I can have joy. So I can have peace of mind. So I can live in serenity. I mean, after all, why did I start taking drugs and alcohol in the first place? Wasn't I just looking for peace of mind? Didn't I relate to you when I first came here that my whole life I had been restless, irritable, and discontented? That I wasn't ever happy? That I didn't want to be who I was or where I was or doing what I was doing? That I always wanted to be somebody else and be someplace and be doing something else? And then I found alcohol at 13. I sucked a bottle of wine down, a whole bottle, and for the first time, I was okay. So the substance is the medication for the mind-powered disease of alcoholism, which keeps me in the bondage of self. And I need to understand that, you know, through an inventory, that that's what the deal is. We gauge AA personality by AA maturity. That is evidenced by such qualities as strength and understanding from a power greater than ourselves. Surrender or self-centeredness, the practice of honesty, humility, appreciation, forgiveness, promptness in admitting wrongs, making amends, service to others, and the example of a happy, sober life. How's that going to happen? I don't understand how that happens without taking an inventory. But of course, you know, we got all kinds of reasons. All kinds of reasons, you know, and I think one of the biggest holdbacks that we have is the people in AA scare the hell out of us. They scare the hell out of us. Oh, that four step, you know, ooh, scary. Ooh. It's hard. It's difficult. It's really scary, you know. I mean, it's, you know, you're going to have a hard time with it. You know, everything I've had a hard time with, I only made it a hard time. And believe me, if you think I didn't make taking my four step a hard time, you're wrong. Okay? Because I made it a hard time too. You know, and I learned from my sponsor this one word, persevere. He constantly said that to me the whole time during the process of my fourth step. Persevere, Tom. Persevere, persevere, persevere. I can't tell you how long it took me. I mean, well, I'll put it to you this way. They say that you could write too little, but you can't write too much. I wrote 57 pages. true, you know. 57 pages. Well, I had a lot to write about. I've listened to a lot of Fifth Steps. You know, mine took, I don't know, 7-8 hours. I've heard them in an hour, a couple hours. You know, the greatest thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the greatest things about Alcoholics Anonymous that I love so much, is that this is your program. You have to design this program. It's not my program. It doesn't have to be done exactly the way that I did it. I had to find what worked for me. There's things that really wouldn't have worked for me too well. Maybe they would have worked for others, but they wouldn't have worked for me too well. You know, probably one of the biggest reasons they wouldn't have worked for me too well was because I was such a liar. I had been lying to myself my whole life. Probably one of the reasons they wouldn't have worked for me too well was because I was a rationalizer and a justifier to soothe my conscience and minimize my guilt. One of the reasons they wouldn't have worked for me too well is because, you know, I lived in such denial over who I was. I mean, I was a terrible liar. I would tell such BS stories constantly. You know, I told my sponsor, when I started to realize what a liar I was, it started bothering me. And I said to him, you know, I lie too much. And he said, well, you know how you solve that, Tom? And I said, how's that? And he goes, when you realize that you're standing there telling these people one of these BS stories, okay, you just have to stop, look that person in the face, and say, oh, wait a minute, excuse me. That was a lie that I just told you. I said, you mean to tell me that you're asking me to tell the person that I'm a liar? He says, yeah, if you have to do that, you'll stop lying. A lot of people thought my sponsor was crazy who took me through the steps. You know, I talked a lot about the man who took me through the first three steps, Dennis O. He was a great, he still is. You know, he's 91 and going on his 56th year in AA, and still calls me up telling me about some guy I need to help. 91, 56 years sober, and he's still worried about you and how he can help you. See? That's the AA way. That's how we find ourselves to become spiritually fit. Well, first thing we need to do is we need to figure out what's wrong with us. What's standing in the way of me getting spiritually fit in Alcoholics Anonymous? And like my sponsor was fond of saying, it's hard to see the picture when you're in the frame. Self cannot help self to get out of self. So where's it might be some people might be perfectly fine with working the four step the way it's laid out in the big book. That's not the way we did it. And there is 100 ways that you can work a four step. I mean, I guess I heard they got some California way of working the four step where there's 400 and some questions. You know, that's a little drastic, you know, but maybe that works for somebody. I don't know. I'm going to share with you, you know, how I work the four step, the way we work the four step. You know, my sponsor told me, he said, listen, I want you to get a notebook, all right? A notebook, you know, just a three-binder notebook with all of the lines in there. Because you're going to need that. And this fourth step is done in three parts. The first part, I'm going to give you the first part. And after you finish the first part, I'll give you the second part. And after you finish the second part, I'll give you the third part. I said, okay. So he said, the first part is you take the notebook. And I only want you to answer two questions. That's all you have to do, is answer two questions. And basically what you're going to do is you're going to write a life story. And you're going to start with as far back as you can remember. And before you write, and I'd like you to write something every day. You know, try to write maybe 30 minutes a day. But don't sit there and drive yourself crazy and try to make yourself write everything down at once. But if you write a little something every day, that's good. He said, what I want you to do always, before you start writing, I want you to get on your knees and I want you to ask God to open your mind and to clear your mind for you so that you'll be able to put down on paper what God would have you put down on paper. The way that I was brought up in AA, everything of the way that I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous was about bringing God into it. That's the way that I was brought. That has what I have been doing for 33 years now, is bringing God into my life. Everything concerns God. So I have to ask God to open my mind so that he can clear it. Because you see, my mind is constantly got its alcoholism going on in it. And it wants to remember things the way it wants to remember them. And I need clarity. Clarity is what I need. I need clarity. I need a clear mind. And so I ask God to clear my mind every time before I start writing. And I was told to go all the way back and remember the first thing, the very first thing that ever happened to me that I felt good about. You see, this is about feelings. This isn't about analysis. The old timers in AA taught us analysis brings about paralysis. AA is not group therapy. It's a we program, a fellowship. And it's a philosophy to live a way of life. And so I need to remember the first thing that ever happened to me that I felt good about. Because there's a lot of things in my life that's happened to me that I felt good about. My whole life hasn't been about everything I felt bad about. It's also about what I felt good about. Write that first thing down that happened to you that you felt good about. I thought as far back as I could, and I remembered being 4 years old. That's as far back as I could think. I'm playing in the mud in the backyard with my little brother, who was a year younger than me. That was the first thing I could remember that I felt good about. And then he said, and then write down the first thing that you can remember that you felt bad about. And the first thing I could remember that I felt bad about was when they brought my little sister home, who was 4 years younger than me, from the hospital. I felt bad about that. I wonder why. And then, just write. Just write. And do it in 10-year increments. The first 10 years of your life doesn't have to be in the order, you know, back and forth like that, but just whatever comes to your mind, that this and this happened to me and I felt good about it, or this and this happened to me and I felt bad about it. And you're not to figure it out. This isn't about you figuring it out. This is just about you only saying either you felt bad about it or you felt good about it. One or the other. You know why? Because it's pretty hard to lie about how you felt. It's pretty hard to lie about either you felt good or you felt bad. It's just that simple. And I'm a big believer in the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. I have found that Alcoholics Anonymous works real well for me when I keep it simple. And analysis does bring about paralysis. I can sit around day in and day out trying to analyze myself and analyze everything. And I'm just like my wife likes to call it the hamster in the cage. It just runs around and around and around and around. Doesn't go anywhere. But it runs around. I've been that hamster in the cage for years, running around, trying to figure everything out. Why am I always trying to figure everything out? I'm trying to figure everything out so I can have control. Because that's what my alcoholism is all about. It's all about fear. And the fear thinks that if I can have control, then I can be happy. I'm the guy who thinks he can wrest satisfaction and happiness from this life if he just manages well. And so I have to put down on the paper everything that ever happened to me that I felt good about, and everything that ever happened to me about that I felt bad about, and skip a line in between. He says, because you're going to need that for the second part. So tell me when you're finished with the first part. So 57 pages later, and I don't know how many weeks. I mean, I'm sure it was a good 3 or 4 months anyway, working on that fourth step. And he kept telling me, persevere, persevere, persevere. You know, when are you going to finish? Well, every time I'd see him at a meeting, it was, when are you going to finish? When are you going to finish? Like a good sponsor should. I do the same thing with the guys I sponsor. They learn the word persevere too. There's one thing we learned out of the fourth step. It's how to persevere. Because if I let this stop me, I'm telling you, you know, I've been sponsoring a lot of people for a long time. And I have lost more people who were on the fourth step than anything else, any other part of the program. Basically, though, I know that they had a problem with the first three. Because anytime we're having a problem with a step, we need to go back to the steps before that. If we're having a problem with a step, it's because we've got a problem with the steps before that. And so I says, okay, I'm ready for the second part. So he gives me the second part. He said, now, here's a list of assets and liabilities. Everybody has assets and liabilities. And so what you're going to put in that blank space in between those lines is you're going to list and identify these feelings according to this list of assets and liabilities. That's the second part. He said, and then in when you finish that, let me know. And then I finished that, and then the third part, he says, okay, now we're going to group these together and see how many times these assets and these liabilities come up. And they're going to tell us what you've got to work with. They're going to tell us, you know, what your assets are and what your liabilities are. This is an inventory to see what I have to work with and to see what is blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. This is what we're talking about. It's the defects of my character that block me from the sunlight of God's Spirit. And we're going to group them together, and we're going to figure out what your patterns are, how you have have continued to do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. You see? And there was a lot of that in my life, where I kept doing the same behavior over and over again and thinking that it was going to bring me a different result, and it brought me the same result all the time. I learned that I had three main defects of character. They were self-condemnation, that I had condemned myself my whole life, always telling myself that I was no good, no good, no good, no good. False pride to make up for all that self-condemnation. I had to create a character. I created this character. I built this character from the ground up. I made the person that I was. Other people were not responsible. Remember when I talked prior to tonight, I talked about having to have to take responsibility for my alcoholism. I have to stop blaming everything and everybody else. You know why? Because that's not productive. It's not productive. If I want to change and I don't want to keep living in the past and doing the same things over and over again, expecting a different result, then I need to change the guy that brought me into AA. Because if I don't change the guy that brought me into AA, he's the same guy that's going to take me back out again. I know that from experience, because that happened to me over and over again, because I refused to change. I refused to do the work. So there's a lot of ways to do the work. What's important is doing the work. Of course, like a good alcoholic, though, he told me as I was doing this process, my sponsor, he said, "Now listen, Tom, just do this work and don't think about the fifth step." Well, like a good alcoholic, that's the first thing I started doing. As soon as he told me that, I started thinking about that fifth step. Oh, you know, this and this, these few things that I did that I was so ashamed of. You know, I don't see no reason to share that with another human being. I really don't, you know. So, you know, I'm just going to leave that off of that fourth step. I'm going to leave it off of there. I don't need to share that. Look, I know I did it. God knows I did it. What do I need to tell somebody else about it for? I don't need to tell anybody. I'll take that to the grave. I won't put that down. And the night, the very night that I was getting ready to finish that fourth step, I went to a meeting. And it just so happened the meeting was on the fourth step. And it was just so happened that a man came there to speak on the fourth step. I'd never seen him before. He was from out of town. And it just so happened the man shared how when he came to the close of his fourth step, there were things that he did not write down, things that he was going to take to the grave with him. And how he spent the next 5 years in AA. He didn't drink, but he spent the next 5 years in AA miserable as hell and couldn't go on with the steps. And went to therapy, went to counseling, you know, did all kinds of stuff. Couldn't figure out what his problem was. Finally got a new sponsor. And between him and that sponsor, it came out that there were things that he had left off of his fourth step. And you know what? I knew that God had sent that man there that night to talk to me, because I'd already wasted enough time. 10 years of in and out. I knew from praying. That's where prayer comes in. That's where prayer comes in. Because when I ask God for help, God sends it. He sends it because he works through the people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how my God works. He works through the people of the rooms in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how he speaks to me. He speaks to me through the mouths of the people in AA. And I heard him. And I said to myself, I'd already wasted enough time. I've already done enough of that. And now I'm going home and I'm going to put all that stuff in there. All of it. I don't care about any consequences. I'm sharing it all. You know, I'll talk more when I do the fifth step next week. But tonight I brought copies. This is my thing when it comes to four steps and 10 steps and 11 steps. I like to bring, I've got 200 of these, so there ought to be enough if you pass them out for me. This is just a way, it may be helpful. There's a whole bunch of them there. They got them. Everybody a second. We thought conditions drove us to drink. And when we tried to correct these conditions and found that we couldn't, to our entire satisfaction, our drinking went out of hand. And we became alcoholics. It never occurred to us that we needed to change ourselves to meet conditions, whatever they were. But in AA, we slowly learned that something had to be done about our vengeful resentments, self-pity, and unwarranted pride. We had to see that every time we played the big shot, we turned people against us. We had to see that when we harbored grudges and planned revenge for such defeats, we were really beating ourselves with the club of anger we had intended to use on others. We learned that if we were seriously disturbed, our first need was to quiet that disturbance, regardless of who or what we thought caused it. To see how erratic emotions victimized us often took a long time. We could perceive them quickly in others, but only slowly in ourselves. First of all, we had to admit that we had many of these defects, even though such disclosures were painful and humiliating. Where other people were concerned, we had to drop the word blame from our speech and thought. This required great willingness even to begin, but once over the first two or three high hurdles, the course ahead began to look easier, for we had started to get perspective on ourselves, which is another way of saying that we were gaining humility. What is humility? It ain't being humbled. Alcoholism humbled me. Humility is nothing but the truth. The truth about me. See, the problem, though, is that I'm three people. I'm the person that I want you to think I am. I'm the person that I think I am. And then I'm the person that I really am. And that's what this is about. It's about figuring out who the person is that I really am. Did we have enough to go around? Good. If we look at the top of this, you see that it talks about the introduction of the four steps starts at the bottom of page 63 of the AA text. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Through our decision was a vital and crucial step. It could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. The big book authors tell us we're to take the fourth step immediately after the third step prayer. There's no waiting period between the surrender and the sharing steps. Why assets and liabilities? Many early AAs were business people, and they identified with the equation for a commercial inventory, which is assets equals liabilities plus owner equity. The assets and liabilities checklist were used by the very early AAs to take people through the steps before the big book was written. The assets were the four absolutes: honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. The liabilities were dishonesty, resentment, selfishness, and fear. Remember my mentor who took me through the first two steps looked in my face and said, "You know what? I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief, and I never met another alcoholic who wasn't." And the first thought that went through my mind was, is he talking about me? He better not be talking about me. I'm not a liar, a cheat, and a thief. I'm just a nice guy who's been messed over. That's what I thought. That's why I was told, you know what, Tom, you don't stand much of a chance of changing until you get rid of your victim story. The victim story's got to go. And all my life, I went around with a big V tattooed on my forehead. That was the victim. Poor me, poor me, pour me another damn drink. Many people today are unfamiliar with the assets and liabilities checklist that was used by the AA pioneers to take newcomers through the fourth step. This checklist is discussed on page 64 of the Bigfoot. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged or usable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. We are checking the stock on hand, bringing to light the dead stock, humbly and honestly searching out the flaws in our makeup which cause our failure. Our lives have been unsuccessful because we are carrying too much old dead stock that weighed us down. We do this before the deeper cleaning grudge list. When the 12 and 12 was published in 1952, the authors made no reference to a three-column inventory. During their discussion of the fourth step, what they did describe in great detail was the assets and liabilities checklist. On page 42, they state, nearly every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case of misdirected instinct. When that happens, our great natural assets, the instincts, have turned into physical and mental liabilities. Clear recognition of assets, positive conditions, maintains emotional balance. The 12 and 12 infers that a flaws-only inquiry may cause wallowing in a messy bog. Some persons then drank, some died. So this is a very simple thing to do. And on the back, you'll see an example of how it's done. And on this page, I've given you a clear, clean copy. This can also be used in the 10th step. When we get to the 10th step, we'll talk more about that. You can make copies of this. And you can do inventories on all kinds of things that deal with your life, okay? I find it very helpful, you know, and I think maybe you may find it helpful too. Before I close tonight, this is Father John Doe's Sobriety and Beyond. Mike taught me that to show you and tell you what I'm reading from so you understand where I'm getting this stuff from, because I don't get anything from me. That's one thing I learned. I learned my stuff didn't work too well. All my stuff ever did was get me drunk. And so whatever you hear out of me, I stole it from somebody else, okay? It's not mine. I didn't come up with it. I didn't come up with any of this. You know, I took what I did was what I was taught to do, is that this is my program. And I need to make and build my program from the structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, the way it's laid out in the big book in the 12 and 12, and tune it to what works for me, just as whether you understand God as you understood him or God as you don't understand him. Figure it out, but do it. Do some fourth step, okay? Please. Now we turn on the heat and warmth of God's grace and light, and we search our innermost selves for all the defects and faults that have been accumulating for the years. We have looked at ourselves many times in the past. Every picture we got was a false one, discolored by pride and prejudice, or darkened by the ramifications of our own rationalizations. We looked and thought we saw perfection, and we were puffed up with pride. We looked at other times and saw putrefaction, and we were cast down by self-pity. Now we let go of those false pictures. We look, we search, aided by the light of God's grace. We let God give us a true picture. We see ourselves as we are seen by God and others. And we are neither puffed up nor are we cast down. For we have the knowledge now that the perfections we see have been placed there by God. And we know that the putrefactions we see will be replaced by God if we let go of the past and let God do so. And now, no longer shall we be afraid to look at ourselves. Our inventory is fearless. The fear of a lifetime has been replaced by faith in God. Be not afraid. Fear not. It is I. If God be with us, who can be against us? Even if I walk through the valley of death, I shall not fear. Even though he slay me, I shall trust him. So away with fear. Let it go the way of all phobias. And let God direct our inventory. And we begin. And many, many times in making it, take it easy. Time means nothing. Easy still does it. Let us breathe a fervent and sincere, O God, that I may see all men and women too of faith have courage. Have courage. Thanks.
All right, let's thank Tom again. And now we're going to bring up Fred for the secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Mike to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Mike, I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
'40s-style Big Book sponsorship. From the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. No? Please join us Monday nights where we have a big book study meeting where the big book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print big book and big book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
Okay. We have tonight's session and all the past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study at 7:15 upstairs on the third floor. And those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. So we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer, but I have two announcements after we're done, so don't jump up and run out. So, all right. Can we have a moment of silence followed by the Lord's Prayer? Our Father, two announcements. So first announcement is that next week our Thursday night meeting is at the same time, but it is not in this room. It's going to be across the street in the main sanctuary. They're having some event here, so we can't do it in this room. And then also, just a quick reminder, there's a 75-foot no smoking vape zone in front of the doors. When you leave here tonight, do not light up or vape until you're 75 feet from the doors. Thanks for your cooperation. Thanks again. Have a good night, and see you next week.
zan. Oh, when you smiling, when you smiling, the whole world smiles with you, yes, when you laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. Stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby.